The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Marion McKeown is unavailable to join us this evening, so to offer some counterbalance to our good friend Cal Thomas, we are joined by Lorcan Nine from the Communications Clinic, who writes each week on American affairs for the Sunday Independent. But before we hear from either of them, we're going to talk a little bit about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the US Supreme Court judge and women's rights champion who died at the weekend, and the race on Trump's part to replace her before the presidential election in early November with a suitably conservative candidate. Let's hear an extract from an advertisement done by the Lincoln Project, which features the voice at the end of Donald Trump, but before that, Senator Lindsey Graham, when they spoke previously about filling vacancies in the last year of a presidential term.
If there's a Republican president in 2016 and a vacancy occurs in the last year of the first term, you can say, Lindsey Graham said, let's let the next president, whoever it might be, make that nomination. And you could use my words against me and you'd be absolutely right.
I think the next president should make the pick. I would be not in favor of going forward.
And yet, Cal Thomas, there's a rush to nominate almost as soon as Ruth Bader Ginsburg is buried. They'd be naming a successor.
Well, Matt, you mentioned a moment ago balance on the program. I thought you were the balance on the program, but we're happy to have the other gentleman with me as well. Look, I think what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said in 1996 in a different context applies here. She said there's nothing in the Constitution that says the president stops being president in his last year. And as far as hypocrisy goes, hypocrisy is the mother's milk of politics in the United States. I mean, you can pick sound bites from Democrats and Republicans contradicting themselves. The fact is, Trump's nominee is going to be confirmed. We've had three Republican senators today who are key to this vote say they are going to vote on the nomination. Mitt Romney of Utah, Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, and Cory Gardner of Colorado. Now, there have been two, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine, who said that they would prefer to wait until after the election. That's their right to do so. Republicans have the votes. The fact is, the court, it looks like it's going to be returned to its constitutional boundaries and not legislate from the bench. That is what conservatives have wanted for almost six decades, and it appears we're on the edge of getting that. Hallelujah.
This rush, though, to get a conservative Republican flavoring judge onto the Supreme Court, does that suggest that they are worried that Trump is going to lose the election, that they can't afford to wait?
Well, of course, the polls said that he was going to lose the election 4 years ago, and the polls were wrong. A lot of people just aren't responding to pollsters and the rest. And I think we have the debate, of course, the first of three debates, if they occur, and Biden shows up next Tuesday. And I think that's these debates are going to count for an awful lot. But there's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to wait for weeks or months or that you can't, as you say, rush the nomination. The leading candidate, Amy Coney Barrett, who is a Roman Catholic, and who basically was denounced for her faith by Senator Dianne Feinstein of California during her confirmation hearings for the appeals court, saying that your dogma runs deep. Well, they don't say that about an atheist or a liberal religious person. So I think that if it is, in fact, Amy Coney Barrett, she's Roman Catholic. She has seven kids, two of them adopted. She and her husband from Haiti, the other five natural-born children to her husband, and she's already been through the vetting process. I don't know what they're going to do to try to destroy her, but I think the Democrats will do all they can.
Now, you mentioned that back in the 1970s or 90s that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had said that a president could nominate a replacement to the Supreme Court whenever he or she wanted. Well, that apparently wasn't her final wish, but Donald Trump took issue with that on Fox and Friends yesterday.
Well, I'd much rather have a vote before the election because there's a lot of work to be done, and I'd much rather have it. We have plenty of time to do it. I mean, there's really a lot of time. So let's say I make the announcement on Saturday. There's a great deal of time before the election. That'll be up to Mitch in the Senate. But I'd certainly much rather have the vote. I think it sends a good signal. And it's solidarity and lots of other things. And I'm just doing my constitutional obligation. I have an obligation to do this. So I would rather see it before the election.
So that was why he wants to fill the vacancy as soon as possible. But here's his conspiracy theory about calling into question relatives of Ruth Bader Ginsburg saying what her dying wish was.
Well, I don't know that she said that, or was that written out by Adam Schiff and Schumer and Pelosi? I would be more inclined to the second. Okay, you know, that came out of the wind. It sounds so beautiful. But that sounds like a Schumer deal, or maybe a Pelosi or Shifty Schiff. So that came out of the wind. Let's see. I mean, maybe she did and maybe she didn't. Look, the bottom line is we won the election. We have an obligation to do what's right and act as quickly as possible. We should act quickly because we're going to have probably election things involved here, you know, because of the fake ballots that they'll be sending out.
Now, Lorcan Lyon from the Communications Clinic, who writes regularly in American Affairs for the Sunday Independent, is with us today. Lorcan, could this mess be partly Ruth Bader Ginsburg's fault in that if she had retired when she reached the age of 80 during Barack Obama's administration, Obama could have put in a liberal member of the Supreme Court and now America wouldn't be facing this overwhelming conservative bias on the Supreme Court instead?
Look, you could possibly take that view. I don't think anybody can be forced to retire, particularly, and I think as she proved subsequently to that, that she still had a lot of value to add. So, look, and American politics is relatively unpredictable, so it's hard to know what would have happened. And I'm sure she was looking at saying, geez, I'm not sure what's going to happen next, so I'll stick around and I'll use my voice. I think what's most relevant about all of this is, I agree with Cal, they have the votes. It's official, they have the votes. The Democrats will do everything they can. They have to try the hypocrisy line the voters won't care about, but they have to try it anyway. They have to be seen to fight this in the Senate, but they have the votes to get it through. Whether they'll have time to do it before the election, I'm not sure. They probably will. So it's going to happen. What matters now from a political point of view is what do the Democrats do about that situation? Because they have to gear up and they have to enter the fight on the terms that have been set by the Republicans. So they have to come out and say, if you as Republicans push past or perceived norms of how this should be done, we will push back and we will pack the Supreme Court. If they carry the Senate, if they carry Congress, if they have the presidency, they can change the legislation and they can increase the number of justices from nine to 10, 11, 12, 13. FDR tried it and failed. Biden could try and succeed. Leaving aside whether that's moral or right to do or not, politically they have to do it because otherwise they won't get the turnout they need because fatalism will kick in. If you have the voters who are unconvinced on that anything can change but are going to give Biden the benefit of the doubt, if they look at it and say, geez, even if we win here, even if Biden gets in, abortion rights will not be protected, Affordable Care Act will probably still not be protected, environmental legislation will not be protected because we don't have the Supreme Court. So they have to punch back and show that they are willing to break some norms of their own if they're successful, to give their voters something to fight for, something to show up for.
But Lorcan, could this also be a gift to the Republicans and to Trump in that allows him to fight the culture wars in this forthcoming presidential election to get attention away from the failure to deal with COVID-19 and the 200,000 deaths that have resulted?
It certainly changed the news cycle for the first time in a while, and something that obviously the Republicans have been hoping for and have been fighting for, and it's happened. So look, the old line of events, you know, events have occurred. So it is going to bring more of those social issues up front and centre. My take on it is that it's just going to galvanise both sides. That this is going to be about turnout. This election is always going to be about key turnout in key states. This is going to galvanise both sets of voters in different ways, but to the same levels. I think if you get into an all-out turnout war, both sides get all their voters or as many as possible out, the Democrats have a slight edge. And we would have seen this already given the fundraising that has occurred on the back of the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. There's been a huge influx of money into Senate races for Democrats in close seats. So I could be wrong about that, but I think when it comes to turnout, if Trump hits the same levels as last year, if the Democrats get back to Obama 2008-2012 levels, the Democrats win. I'm not sure if Trump has many more votes to bring out. I think the Democrats do, but they have to get the message in to galvanise those votes correct.
Now, Cal Thomas, what do you make of that analysis?
Well, there's no, well, it's very good analysis. A very informed individual. I'm proud to be on with him. But look, there's no guarantee for Democrats to rule. Even the New York Times has a column today. I was shocked to read it that the Supreme Court has lived outside of the boundaries of the Constitution for years, and all the Republicans want to do is to put it back within its original role. The founders of this country understood the Supreme Court to be the least powerful of the three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial. Republicans and conservatives want Congress to legislate, not the courts. But the Democrats have advanced policies, social and other issue policies, through the courts and not the legislative body, the elected representatives of the people. So that's all conservatives and Republicans want to do, put the court back within its constitutional boundaries. Democrats are really worried because if they have to vote on these issues, a lot of people who normally vote for Democrats might not, as we've seen in a number of elections in the past, especially in the South.
I mentioned that we now have 200,000 deaths from COVID-19 in the United States of America. But let's hear what President Donald Trump had to say about that in Ohio last night when he told a crowd of non-distanced, mostly maskless rally attendees that COVID-19 affects virtually nobody.
We now know the disease. We didn't know it. Now we know it. It affects elderly people with heart problems and other problems. If they have other problems, that's what it really affects. That's it. You know, in some states, thousands of people, nobody young, below the age of 18, like nobody. They have a strong immune system. Who knows? You take your hat off to the young because they have a hell of an immune system. But it affects virtually nobody. It's an amazing thing.
It's an amazing thing. Writing off old people like that, Cal, what do you make? 200,000 deaths affects virtually nobody.
Well, the rate is less, of course, than other countries, but as he said, and anybody with the right mind would say, even one death is too many. Look, there are ways to prevent from this disease. We all know it. I just got tested because I had to go to the state of Alaska last week, and Alaska does not allow anybody in unless they've been tested. So I was tested. I was tested negative, as I expected, my wife as well. But we wore the mask. We washed the hands. We practiced social distancing, and I'm not worried about it, even though I'm in an age group now, but don't have underlying conditions that would, presumably make me more vulnerable than other people. A lot of these people who are passing away, as the president said, do have underlying conditions. They are of a certain age. They are vulnerable. It's a terrible thing. I hope we get a vaccine. I hope the vaccine works, and I hope that we can eliminate this thing, although other viruses like the flu and HIV/AIDS are still with us. Even though there are treatments for it, they're still with us.
Let's hear a little bit also of how Trump began his rally in Ohio last night.
And you know what we're protesting? We're protesting stupidity, okay? Because so many stupid things you see here. But hello, I'll tell you what, Ohio, how good have you been? How good have you been?
Aloho, Lorcan Nyhan. He's protesting stupidity, doing a good job of it.
I hadn't heard either of those. I think on the first clip there, I think it's astounding just how his inability sometimes to adapt to what's in front of him. One of his big vulnerabilities in this election is the fact that he's losing over 65s. Republicans have not lost over 65s in quite a long time, and he's losing them to Biden. One of the reasons why he might be losing them, or certainly not being able to win them back, is the idea that he has just thrown them to the wolves of the coronavirus because he wants the economy to get back up and running. That's certainly a narrative the Democrats could push. He's giving them fuel to push that narrative. On the we're protesting stupidity, look, he's hoping to wish the virus away. It seems to be working, and to some degree, if you look at some of the polling coming out of Florida, the amount of people who are worried about the virus has decreased massively, and that's obviously a key swing state. So he's getting some change from what it is that he's trying to do in just wishing this away, moving the news cycle away from it. I think you would have seen the reaction to 100,000 deaths was very, very different to 200,000 deaths. So he's getting a bit of change from that strategy. I'm not sure if it's going to work enough, but it certainly is working in Florida so far.
Lorcan Nyhan, Cal Thomas, thank you both for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.